Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C.
For Dr. Samora Camara to say that the Electoral Commissioner and the Chief Electoral Commissioner should be replaced with internationally accredited Election Commissioner, whatever that is very, very much unfortunate and an attack on the sovereignty of Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone's ruling party rejects demands for the replacement of all top officials of the Electoral Commission.
For the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Akinwumi Bola Tinubu, to suspend him, they must have some information at his disposal. And usually by the Nigerian public service rules, when there are allegations against you, it is appropriate for you to step aside.
Nigeria's president suspends the chairman of the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, or EFCC.
Killed so many of our citizens, killed so many violated women of Congolese, to the extent that we have so many killed. And that's why we said, if the investigation can start from there and record all the information from there, and we can actually establish the truth.
And the International Criminal Court plans to investigate war crimes in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The ruling Sierra Leone's People's Party, or SLPP, has rejected demands for the replacement of all top officials of the Electoral Commission days ahead of the general election on Saturday. The party told a recent press conference that demands by Samora Camara, the presidential candidate of the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC, is a ploy aimed to increase tension and chaos during the elections. Camara said the replacement of the officials with international experts will be key to ensuring the coming polls are transparent and credible. But the governing party rejected his demand, saying they are unconstitutional. Attorney Umaru Napoleon Koroma is the general secretary of the SLPP. He tells me that the demands of the APC presidential candidate days before the vote are a recipe for chaos and violence.
Those demands, with all due respect to them, are very more preposterous. They are unreasonable and unfounded, both in practice and in law. The commissioners are appointed pursuant to provisions of our constitution. No one, for example, becomes a chief electoral commissioner or a commissioner of the electoral commission if you are not a citizen of Sierra Leone. For Dr. Samora Camara to say that the electoral commissioners and the chief electoral commission should be replaced with internationally accredited election commissioner, whatever that is very, very much unfortunate and an attack on the sovereignty of Sierra Leone. How can you have people who are not qualified by our constitution and even have the effrontery to suggest that they should be the ones coming to conduct our elections? Peter, even at the peak of our civil war in this country in 1996, when we had our first multi-party democratic elections after the overthrow of the APC one-party system, we never breached that provision of our constitution.
Basically, if the demands are not met, it means that the outcome of the election could be disputed, because they are saying that the chief electoral commissioner, in that case, Mr. Kony, was imposed on the people of Sierra Leone, and the parliament, for that matter, that has been dissolved before then, basically forced to approve him.
Peter, that's very, very much false and a blatant lie by the opposition. The constitution says the chief electoral commissioner can be appointed after consultations with all political parties in the Republic of Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone has 14 political parties participating in this election, and 13 political parties have filed in presidential candidates. The president did the consultation by writing to them. The electoral commissioner was appointed. He went to parliament for approval. The APC members of parliament, led by the now running mate, General Ramadan Madiba, who is now the running mate to Dr. Samora Camara, was in parliament as leader of the APC in parliament. The issue of Kone was discussed, and all, like all other commissioners, debates were done, and the electoral commissioner was duly approved. So for them to come 10 days to elections now to start denying all of these things is just a call for them to have an excuse to create chaos and anarchy in our country.
Talking about violence, the APC has complained that most of their supporters have been prevented from campaigning in the strongholds of SLPP, and that state institutions, including the police, are being used to intimidate and harass them to prevent their supporters from coming out to vote, and that they are being arrested arbitrarily sometimes in their homes when they have not even done anything at all, and that they are calling for unconditional release of all their supporters if indeed the government is committed to ensuring a peaceful election. Your response to that?
That is not true, Peter. In fact, in my press statement, in my press brief conference 2 days ago, I did catalog the issues relating to elections violence against our own party member in the northern part of the country, which the APC presumed to be their stronghold, and even some part in the southern region. I had set up an incident reporting room for the SLPP. I have captured all of those incidents in the first 2 weeks of the campaigning, and I brought out documents and names of people and incidents and venues where they occurred against Israeli People's Congress, against Israeli People's Party. We presented a document to the press on the day of our press conference, and we showed them that they can go out there and cross-check those pieces of information which you have given out to them as members of the Fourth Estate. Peter, those cases we've always reported, as I speak to you, many of them are under police investigations. But coming to the other issues, the APC is on record. A former member of parliament in Lungi said on record that they are going to massacre any SLPP member in Potloko, for example, that if they suspect any SLPP member in any place, let them come and tell them, they'll go there and massacre them. And yesterday, General Ramadan Bajuba, the running mate of the All People's Congress Party, was yesterday on video telling the people of this country and the APC supporters that they, the APC, will have to jump on the streets, that elections will not hold if the demands of the APC are not met, and they will jump on the streets, and any police officer who attempts to stop them to enforce the law will not be treated as a police officer.
Attorney Umaru Napoleon Koroma is the General Secretary of the Governing Sierra Leone People's Party, or SLPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Still in Sierra Leone, the Campaign for Human Rights and Development International has stepped up efforts to educate voters in the run-up to the June 24 elections. Abdul Fatoma, the executive director of the organization, says his group will also organize a workshop for stakeholders, including journalists, about internet connectivity and communication during the election process. His remarks come as a section of the population expresses concern about internet and telephone connectivity interruptions during the vote. This as the Electoral Commission prepares to administer the presidential, legislative, and local elections. Abdul Fatoma, the executive director of the Campaign for Human Rights and Development International, tells me that his organization will petition the authorities, including the president, to ensure there are no internet and telephone interruptions during the elections.
Civic education and voter education is necessary to ensure that all constituents, men and women, and who are of voting age, you know, have the right to know what they are participating in. And so with that, our organization, in partner with the Interreligious Council and the Eminent Women Peace Mediators and the Electoral Commission, engage, you know, several groups, like the disabled group and vulnerable women, the Market Women Association group, and also traditional leaders across the country. And we have also been doing this 2 years prior before the elections, you know, so we want to have a well-informed citizen that will be participating in the June 24, 2023 elections.
Now, I also understand that your organization is planning to hold a workshop about internet shutdown because there are concerns that possibly there could be interruption of communications in and out of Sierra Leone during the election process. How true is this?
Yeah, I mean, that is true because 2018, there was a disruption during the counting process leading towards the runoff. And our organization with our partners in the US Onipro and Access Now monitored that situation and reported on it. And so ahead of the Saturday election, June 24, we have decided to train journalists, human rights defenders, civil society, you know, activists about internet shutdown. And we also call in our stakeholders like government officials, election management bodies, and the other authorities as well, for them to make statements and guarantee to the unions that, you know, there is not going to be an internet shutdown. Then we'll be putting out an open letter signed by several organizations across the world, asking President Bio to ensure that internet will not be shut down while election is going on. And the campaign is called Keep It On. And so we will be asking the government of Sierra Leone to
keep the internet on throughout the electioneering process. And so with that, we'll also copy the Minister of Information, and we will also copy telecommunications and internet service provider and all the key stakeholders in the country that are within electioneering process. So then we'll also have a look at civil society organization in Sierra Leone that will be signing to that letter.
There are also concerns that some opposition groups are calling for the postponement of the election. They are unhappy about the constitution of the election umpire, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, and as well as other commissioners who will help administer the coming June 24 elections. If their wishes or their demands are met, wouldn't that create a constitutional crisis?
Definitely so. If their concerns goes as they wish, it will create a lot of crisis, not only constitutional crisis, but also security crisis in this country. There are laws that, you know, set up the function of the Electoral Commission, and also laws that create a provision for the hiring and removal of Electoral Commissioners. And also, if we are not going to follow those laws, I mean, that's a crisis in this country, because the constitutional provisions are there. If now we have in politicians suggesting that we should postpone our election, and then also bring in international experts, the world international expert, then the laws also make it very clear. For you to qualify to be a commissioner, you have to first qualify and be eligible to be a member of parliament in this country, meaning you have to be a Sierra Leonean. And bringing international experts who are not Sierra Leonean, you know, to actually manage the affairs, I mean, that alone is another vague, you know, approach, because it's not workable. Those demands are not workable. Those demands are against the laws of this country.
Abdul Fatoma is the executive director of the Campaign for Human Rights and Development International. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. Nigeria's newly installed president, Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, has suspended with immediate effect Abdul Rashid Bawah, the chairman of the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, or EFCC. The suspension is aimed at paving the way for an investigation over his conduct in office. Local media reports say the suspension follows what have been called weighty allegations of abuse of office, allegations the former chairman sharply denies. It also comes after the president suspended Godwin Emefiele, governor of the country's central bank. Analysts say it appears the new president is cleaning house to name replacements as he steers the affairs of the country. For the latest developments following the suspension of the chairman of the anti-graft agency, I reach practicing lawyer Douglas Ogbankwa.
So the EFCC is actually a special organization. They are giving special powers to even freeze the accounts of citizens. They could even get an order of remand, pending investigation and all that. And they have so much, you know, at their disposal in terms of funds we made available for them for their activities. And they have so much independence, you know, to operate. So perhaps, to be very frank, I don't have the benefit of the insight of what would have precipitated the suspension of the EFCC chairman. But for the president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, to suspend him, he must have some information at his disposal. And usually by the Nigerian public service rules, when there are allegations against you, it is appropriate for you to step aside so that you will not be able to interfere with exhibits and witnesses and possible information that may be used against you.
Well, Douglas, he has often dismissed the accusations being leveled against him. So in his view and his supporters' view, his detractors appear to be winning at the moment. How are Nigerians reacting to this?
Well, you know, it's quite Nigerian soldiers are quick to make such allegations more like a way of trying to defend themselves. I do feel like if indeed that the allegations against him are false, investigations would establish it. It's good for us because the EFCC as an organization is a body that was established to clean up the urgent schedule. It was an organization established to particularly, curb bribery, corruption, financial and economic crimes. So like they say, whoever is Caesar's wife actually be above board. If you are for any reason seem to be tainted in your activity, it is good for us to clear that out in order for us to have some kind of sword of Damocles hanging over, you know, his neck.
Now, Douglas, looking at the EFCC, do Nigerians see it as an effective way of fighting corruption? Has it lived up to its billing after it was established?
Well, the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, as is every organization in Nigeria, does not operate outside the purview of the society. So actually, society actually deserves the kind of organization it has. So as a matter of fact, it would actually surprise you that the EFCC, for example, operates within the purview of having a national assembly. A lot of people are bringing down their necks, so you don't expect them to operate without some kind of influence or control or things of that nature. So that is really a problem in the Nigerian sector. You have a lot of people trying to, ask for a favor, and one thing or the other, but how you're able to manage it so that you don't end up soiling your hand is a different ballgame.
Some people are also saying that sometimes it depends on the backing they get, especially from the government or from the president. What are the expectations, if you may, of Nigerians about how the EFCC performs in this new administration led by Bola Ahmed Tinubu, the newly installed president?
Well, as a matter of fact, the EFCC Act, Establishment Act, is a law that gives the law of power to fight financial crime. So it is for them to be able to follow the law to the letter to ensure that the right thing is done. Nigeria, I must say, is facing a very big battle. Most people see the Nigerian National Treasury as a honeypot. So they feel like when you go to America, you hear of the American dream. But in Nigeria here, they talk about the national cake. So there is a perception that Nigeria is like a honeypot that is feast upon. So, but it is for the government to be able to imbue it on their citizens that what is important, according to the former president of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, is that you think of what you can do for your country and not what your country can do for you.
Douglas Ogbankwa is a practicing Nigerian lawyer. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from boom music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the M23 rebel group says it welcomes investigations into alleged war crimes committed in the eastern part of the country. This after the Hague-based International Criminal Court, or ICC, says it will soon launch an inquiry into allegations of war crimes committed by armed groups in the region. The announcement came after the administration in Kinshasa made a new referral calling on the ICC to investigate crimes committed by militants. For more reaction to the coming investigations, I reach Lawrence Kanyuka. He is a spokesperson for the M23 rebel group.
The M23 is pleased for any investigation to take place in east of DRC in particular and DRC in general. We have no problem. We've been calling for investigation for a long time. Since 1994, we have a group of paramilitary and military that came to DRC, which the time was Zaire, called then, today DRC, where we see the group today we call FDLR, killed so many of our citizens, killed so many violated human rights of Congolese to the extent that we have so many killed. And that's why we said, if the investigation can start from there and record all the information from there, and we can actually establish the truth, we don't have no problem. We ask for investigation about the governor of North Kivu, Mr. Constant Ndima, the general, is actually responsible for killing many pygmy back then when he was a rebel.
But Lawrence, the M23 is being accused by several internationally accredited groups, including the Congolese government, of causing mayhem, killing people in the eastern part of the DRC. So why are you blaming others and not faulting your own people who are killing unarmed civilians in the eastern part of DRC?
I'm not down to propaganda or what the DRC government have to say himself, because the DRC government is not as clean as you're thinking. The M23, for example, let me tell you, all the crimes they're saying the M23 has done, but you have to know, you're a journalist, the M23 left DRC, going to Ezal in 2013. From 2013 to date, how many Congolese have been killed? Every day by ADF, every day by CODECO, every day by the Mai Mai, who are today part of the DRC government forces. So you can't blame M23.
Lawrence, you talked about the M23 going into exile. The reports say you went to exile in Rwanda, which the DRC government and other groups accuse of backing the M23 and having influence on you, supplying you weapons and ammunition. And people are saying even when M23 rebels are killed, they are buried in Rwanda. So Rwanda is intrinsic in supporting your actions in DRC to destabilize, and you only hold places where they have rich natural resources or minerals of DRC.
First of all, the M23 never went to exile in Rwanda. The M23 went to exile in Uganda, is where we had all this negotiation taking place, is where we're waiting for the implementation of the declaration of Nairobi. First of all, you are wrong on that, and the DRC government is wrong. Secondly, there's no mineral, anything like resources in Bunagana, in Rutshuru. So you're talking things that are actually part of propaganda. And when we go back to some international institution that do the investigation, let me tell you something, get your attention. Do you know how they record all this information? They get the information from abroad. They are seated in offices abroad, overseas, and rely on the people on the ground, where they give them some incentive and make calls, and they send them videos and audios and pictures. None of them never set a foot in the area they're claiming the crime took place.
Is that why the M23 rebels wrote a letter to the Human Rights Watch protesting the way, the methodology by which it collects data or evidence on the ground in DRC?
But if you look in that letter, it has been said, first of all, praise the work of Human Rights Watch. And it's been said in that letter that the M23 was in contact, in conversation with Human Rights Watch, talking about counter-verification of allegations. So through the conversation with Human Rights Watch, so many things were put to light. Basically, where they were claiming the M23 actually hijacked school to put the base in there, the M23 never done that. And when we asked them, can you tell us the date, a specific place, they can't give it up. If you ask them who actually was raped, they don't have no name. They have just the number. And the place they're claiming that the action happened, it never happened. So when we ask them deeply, can you tell us exactly how did you get this information? Then they will tell us that. There were phone calls they received, their audio they received, their picture they received, their video they received. So these are third-party properties they can't take to the court of law.
Lawrence Kanyuka is a spokesperson for the M23 Rebel Group. He spoke with me from the DRC. Experts are calling on African governments to boost their investment in small and medium-sized enterprises, or SMEs. The call comes in response to findings by financial groups such as the London Africa Advisory Group and the World Bank. They report that small companies account for over 90% of businesses, create between 60 to 80% of jobs, and contribute at least 40% to Africa's gross domestic product. For more, my colleague Michael Hovey recently sat down with Janui Joybet, the founder of COSDEF Business Financing Agency, a Cameroon-based company focused on helping African SMEs secure financing for operations.
Unemployment in Africa is a ticking time bomb. And one major way to diffuse that time bomb is through SMEs. Because when you look at the African marketplace, you will see that it is easier for SMEs to start and start thriving than really, you know, large corporations per se. And, you know, large corporations sometimes, they take some time before they come to Africa because they're looking at the fragmented market, the corruption, the bribery, and the poor governance. But when we are in Africa, when there are no jobs, what next do you do? You think of how to start a business, even without the right skills and the right knowledge. And I've always said that one of the most powerful things that many governments have created across Africa is the Ministry of Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises. Although in many countries, they are not doing the things they should be doing in order to really invest in these people. But however, if Africa is going to move forward, especially when it comes to the economy, we need to find more sustainable working solutions on how to make these SMEs work. Because when they work, they are able to provide the employment. Like, I have many success stories of people that we have worked with who they came to us as just self-employed people, but today they have employed two people. Now imagine if there's a good structured program that can train, mentor, finance, and help 1,000 SMEs to grow, and in 2 years, all these 1,000 people can employ at least three people.
You just partially touched on the mechanisms that are there, that every other government in Africa has a small to medium enterprises ministry. What is your take on the attempts by African governments towards alleviating unemployment?
They have done some good work. Let me start by saying that. But I've always felt that their work is still too political. If they can focus on really working with the professionals and the experts who can contribute, a lot is going to change. You know, in many African countries, they still appoint people in certain positions in the Ministry of SMEs to head these ministries based on their political affiliation. But political knowledge does not solve economic problems. We need the engineers and the experts and the architects in business to actually make this work.
You highlighted how, for example, in Cameroon, you're pushing more to have the private sector do a lot more. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that and expound on that by explaining how that is benefiting Cameroon as a nation and, of course, alleviating unemployment.
If the private sector succeeds, the country is going to succeed. Poverty will reduce because more people will be employed. If we can train more people on how to create value, package value, and make money from that value, we're going to see poverty reduce in a great way. We're going to see more people entering the middle class.
Janui Jobet is the founder of COSDEF Business Financing Agency. He spoke with my colleague Michael Hovey from Washington. Here's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Zambia secured a ticket to the CAF Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023 after beating the already qualified host 3-0 at the Levi Mwanawasa Stadium in Ndola on Saturday. Patson Daka and Kings Kangwa's second half goals added on to a Sergio Aguero own goal in the first half as Abraham Grant Chipolopolo stomped into the tournament in style. The victory at home pushed Zambia to 12 points top of Group H with one match remaining, two ahead of the Ivorians. Elsewhere in Douala, Felicio Mendes-Milson Yao scored 4 minutes from time as Angola edged out the Central African Republic 2-1 to keep their hopes of qualification alive. The goal saw Angola move second in Group E with 8 points, one ahead of the CAR. In Soweto, South Africa secured an impressive 2-1 victory over Morocco. Though both teams were already qualified for the next AFCON, the match served as a great litmus test of Bafana's progress under coach Hugo Broos. Morocco head coach Walid Regragui was left impressed by the level of Bafana's performance after their 2-1 defeat at the FNB Stadium on Saturday.
Bafana, I think he deserved his victory at home. Play very well with intensity, with a good spirit. And us, I think in the first half, we small intensity, you think the game is easy. The first mistake of my goalkeeper, he helps the opponent, he gives confidence.
Staying with football news, Brazil outclassed Guinea 4-1 in a friendly on Saturday as Gelatin Rodrigo, Elder Militao and Vinicius Jr. scored for the five-time world champions who wore an all-black kit in the first half to promote an anti-racism campaign. It was the first of two friendlies for Brazil against African nations in support of Real Madrid's forward Vinicius, who was racially abused in a La Liga match at Valencia in May. The 10th time incident involving him and have been reported by La Liga to prosecutors this season. Brazil will now play Senegal in Lisbon on Tuesday. Away from football news now to tennis, where Morocco have been crowned champions of the 2023 Billie Jean King Cup Africa Group 3 tournament at the Nairobi Club on Saturday. The Moroccans outsmarted Tunisia 2-1 to emerge the best, while home team Kenya dispatched Zimbabwe 2-1 in the fight for bronze. The Moroccans, thanks to the win, earned the nod to represent Africa at the Euro-Africa tournament next term. In boxing news, the rematch between former heavyweight champion Nigerian-British-born Anthony Joshua and British boxer Dillian White has been thrown in doubt due to financial disagreements. Joshua's plan is to head into a massive showdown with Deontay Wilder in Saudi Arabia in December. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The 7-member African President team who are pursuing a peace talks in Ukraine and Russia commence their meeting with President Zelensky on Friday. Prior to that visit, they were shown the place of where it is alleged by government of Ukraine that Russian troops committed grave war crimes. At the end of the meeting, President Ramaphosa, the leader of the team, announced that they had come to speak to President Zelensky because Africa as a continent has suffered tremendously from the war. He noted that wheat from Ukraine and Russia were no longer available on a regular basis as imports from those two countries. Also, most importantly, Russia, the main producer of fertilizer in the world, has been unable to export its fertilizers to the African continent. And because of these reasons, Africa has a vital interest in the restoration of peace and tranquility in Ukraine. President Zelensky reiterated the position of his country that the only country that should be held responsible for the origin of the war and the brutalities is Russia, and that Ukraine would not enter into any negotiation with Putin and Russia until all Russian troops have been withdrawn from Ukrainian territory. And during the visit, missiles were fired very close to Kiev. And the press had made a lot of argument as if this was a signal against the mission of the African president. So it was very important that President Ramaphosa made it clear that the firing of the missiles had not disturbed them, recognizing, of course, that Ukraine is a war zone. Now the delegation proceed to Russia, and President Putin disclosed yesterday that he might be meeting with the delegation in St. Petersburg, where he had gone to deliver a very important speech in the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. Up till now, not much has been said clearly as to when and where the talks between President Putin and the African presidents will take place, and the spokesman could not give much details. In any event, one would expect that when President Putin meets with the African presidential delegation, he would reiterate what he disclosed at the major speech he gave last Friday. He said that contrary to the Western narrative of the war in Ukraine, the real origin of the war was in 2014, when the president of Ukraine, who was looking towards Russia, was forced to escape in the context of the demonstrations in Kiev. And it was that act that caused the Russian-speaking Ukrainians in the Donbas to rise up and started the 8 years war. And he said during those wars, the world ignored the brutality that occurred in the Donbas and did not do much to stop it. And that Russia's special military action was as a response to that. He hinted that he was available for negotiations, but expressed doubts that Ukraine and the Western world were ready for negotiations. It is important at this time to debunk the reports which have been prevalent in the media and often repeated by many Africans. The fact that Africa lacks the strength and ability to conduct negotiations in tricky problems like Ukraine. Too much has been stated about leverage, as if this was the primary factor in the achievement of peaceful negotiation. In fact, prior to Kissinger's shuttle diplomacy in the Middle East in 1973, not much was heard about leverage. It was coined by the media to show why Kissinger was effective. But the truth is that in those negotiations, nothing was disclosed about incentives given to the parties or guarantees. It was months and months after that the Congressional Committee disclosed that such guarantees and incentives that they're giving to the parties in the Middle East. So Africans should not be worried that Africa should be helpless, and the mission of the president should be respected. Let me say also that in the years between the establishment of the United Nations and the end of the Cold War, one particular country, Sweden, neutral Sweden, produced a healthy reservoir of highly competent diplomats who have been skilled in negotiation. And because they came from a country, Sweden, with no imperial ambition, secretary generals after secretary generals of the United Nations go to that pool to select United Nations envoys who are asked to tackle very difficult negotiations. So Africans should rest assured that the presidents have made no mistake in doing what they are doing. They may not in one swoop change the situation, but they would have heard from both sides their views of the war, and in future may be able in the United Nations to influence how the outcome should be. Africa, be confident of your continent. Do not try to diminish its importance in the international community. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. What are the national security implications of the indictment of former President Donald J. Trump? Trump faces 38 counts in connection with keeping hundreds of classified documents in his possession after leaving the White House. The bulk of the charges relate to willful retention of national defense information, a violation of the Espionage Act. The Trump indictment and its fallout next, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
June 19 is a national holiday in the U.S., often referred to as Juneteenth. It is a day set aside to commemorate the emancipation of black slaves. Activists say the day derives its name from a combination of June and 19. We'll have more on the holiday and some of the activities planned to mark it in this report.
Juneteenth has been known by many names. Jubilee Day, Freedom Day, Liberation Day, Emancipation Day. And today, a national holiday.
I'm going back to the South. I'm going back where my roots ain't watered down. Growing like a baobab tree, all life on fertile ground. Ancestor put me on game.
The activists, the leaders who have been calling for this day for so long, including the one and only Miss Opal Lee. We just received a very special recognition from the President of the United States. And I see members of Congress, members of the Congressional Black Caucus, members of the United States Senate who passed this bill unanimously, and all. All of whom collectively were responsible for delivering this bill to the president's desk. And I thank you all. We thank you all. Your nation thanks you all.
Years, June 19th, 1865. John, thanks for being here. Major General of the Union Army arrived in Galveston, Texas, to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation and free the last enslaved Americans in Texas from bondage. The day, as you all know, and we repeat some of what was said, became known as Juneteenth. You all know that. A day that reflects what the psalm tells us. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. Juneteenth marks both the long, hard night of slavery and subjugation and a promise of a brighter morning to come. This is a day of profound, in my view, profound weight and profound power. A day in which we remember the moral stain, the terrible toll that slavery took on the country and continues to take. What I've long called America's original sin. At the same time, I also remember the extraordinary capacity to heal and to hope and to emerge from those painful moments and a bitter, bitter version of ourselves, but to make a better version of ourselves.
Pops his glory. He came down with his drum and a dream that
change the world in a free, uplifting world. And that's all we ever want. Mom came a little after, gave birth to my brother. And then all of the pressure made them fight one another. See, the pain will never last. Did the best with what they had. He knew the world was out for grabs, and he searched to find it. Freedom, 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 oh, freedom. Everything I have, everything I own, all my mistakes, fam, you already know. I wanna be free, I wanna be free. So I searched to find my freedom.
And today, we consecrate Juneteenth for what it ought to be, what it must be, a national holiday. As the Vice President noted, a holiday that will join the others of our national celebrations, our independence, our laborers who built this nation, our servicemen and women who served and died in its defense. And the first new national holiday since the creation of Martin Luther King Holiday nearly four decades ago. I'm grateful to the members of Congress here today, in particular the Congressional Black Caucus, who did so much to make this day possible. I'm especially pleased that we showed the nation that we can come together as Democrats and Republicans to commemorate this day with an overwhelming bipartisan support of the Congress. I hope this is the beginning of a change in the way we deal with one another.
Hold on to me, don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? From men's white flower, it's an every living thing. Mind, use your power, spirit, use your wings. Freedom! 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 Freedom!
We're blessed to mark the day in the presence of Miss Opal Lee. As my mother said, God love her. I had the honor of meeting her in Nevada more than a year ago. She told me she loved me, and I believed it. I wanted to believe it. Miss Opal, you're incredible. A daughter of Texas, grandmother of the movement to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. And Ms. Opal is, you won't believe it, she's 49 years old. Or 94 years old. But you are an incredible woman, Ms. Opal. You really are. As a child growing up in Texas, she and her family would celebrate Juneteenth. And Juneteenth, 1939, when she was 12 years old, a white mob torched her family home. But such hate never stopped her any more than it stopped the vast majority of you I'm looking at from this podium. Over the course of decades, she's made it her mission to see that this day came. It was almost a singular mission. She's walked for miles and miles, literally and figuratively, to bring attention to Juneteenth. To make this day possible, I ask once again, we all stand and give her a warm welcome to the White House.
You're broken down and tired.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the little opportunity given to a monkey to wear clothes does not guarantee it to join the dining table.